This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about the tax consequences of lawsuit settlements and decisions in court. My guest is Robert Wood, a specialist in taxation law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in San Francisco. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trusts and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Now, let me just give you a couple of examples of things that I'd like you to think about as Rob and I talk about the tax consequences of some of the things that you may be faced with. For example, you're stopped at a red light and you get rear-ended, and maybe you get a whiplash, and maybe you end up with a settlement. What's the tax consequences of that? How about your contractor did shoddy work on your condo? You wanted some restoring of your condo or changing or whatever, and the contractor did a lousy job, and now you sued the contractor, and you've actually gotten a judgment and some money. What about if you were unfairly fired, and you get some kind of settlement from your former employer? We're going to be talking about some of these things. So, Rob, welcome back to the program after many years.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Chuck.
Better late than never, huh?
That's right. And you asked me all those questions at once. I hope I don't have to answer.
Could you give a multiple answer to all those? Let me go back for a moment on this one. Okay, let's say you get involved in an auto accident, mm-hmm. and you have some injuries. Let's say you have some property damage, of course, to your vehicle. It's not your fault. Let's say you do get a whiplash. Let's say, besides the physical injury of a whiplash, you also, let's say for some reason, have some emotional stress or distress. You hire an attorney to bring an action, or you deal through an attorney, or maybe deal directly with the other party's insurance carrier, and you end up with a settlement. Now, you're going to get some money for fixing your car. You're going to get some money for your personal injuries, which are the whiplash. Maybe you've lost some money by not being able to go to work for a while. You have some emotional stress. It's really stressed you to such a way that this is true that you have emotional distress. So let's say you get some kind of a settlement, or you may go to court and you have a case and there's a judgment. What are the tax consequences there?
The good news, Chuck, is that with that kind of a fact pattern, which is a very common one, by the way, a mixed sort of injury where you have some property damage and you have some personal physical injury, and some, as often accompanies that kind of injury, some emotional distress damages too. The good news is that generally, properly documented, that should all be tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
That is, a key catalyst, as we'll see as we talk about some other examples, is the presence of physical injury. Up until, as we were talking before the broadcast a few moments ago, up until 1996, emotional distress recoveries were tax-free. Starting in 1996, so it's been, 16 years now, emotional distress damages are taxable unless they are accompanied by or follow from physical injury.
Mm-hmm.
So one key sort of index is there a physical injury? Because if there is, then all of the damages in the example you gave would be tax-free.
Mm-hmm. What about, and I take it then, what you are reimbursed for with respect to having the damage to your car fixed, that's not taxable.
That's right. I guess the exception, there are always exceptions in tax law. The exception would be there's a doctrine called the tax benefit doctrine, and it's actually part of the Internal Revenue Code as well. And this is true under state California state law as well, state tax law. So basically, if you have, say, deducted on your tax return a loss because your car cost you $10,000, it's completely totaled, and you, let's say, for a year or 2 years are suing the insurance company or the other driver, and let's say you have written off that that damaged car as a casualty loss, something we're really not talking about tonight, but it's something that you could do on your tax return.
Whatever the fair market might have been of that vehicle at the time, you've deducted that as a casualty loss on your tax return.
Correct. And then you get the money back. Well, something that might and probably would have been non-taxable now becomes taxable because you claimed a tax deduction. So one of the things that I commonly see is, and this is true with a variety of types of litigation recoveries, is what was the tax treatment done up to now? So is there something that may change the result? But normally, I guess in the typical auto accident, normally there wouldn't have been anything deducted, and therefore, in your example, I'd say all tax-free.
Ah, okay. Well, what about the situation where I mentioned to you the you wanted some work done and a contractor did some work on your condominium or your home and it was very poor and you had to really hire somebody else to redo it or whatever, and you've already paid the contractor a substantial amount of money, you're very unhappy, you decide to bring some action against the contractor. What are the tax consequences there if you recover by way of either a settlement or by way of a judgment, which, of course, you hope you will collect against the contractor?
Indeed.
More that you want more than just the paper.
You want money, that's for sure. This might be a good time to say one general rule here, which is, because you mentioned a court judgment or a settlement.
Yes.
One consistent rule in the tax law is that it doesn't matter whether you are being paid pursuant to a settlement or a judgment. So you'd probably know that intuitively, but that is the rule.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter which way you get the money.
Mm-hmm.
In your condo example, I'd say generally speaking, and of course generalizations can be dangerous, but generally speaking, I'd say it isn't income, and at least in most cases that I see. And the reason for that is we can say throw out some numbers. The reason is that you have bought at some point or inherited perhaps, but let's say you bought your condominium and then you are redoing the kitchen or rehabbing it or whatever you had in your example. And you're paying some money. The contractor does a poor job and then you get the money back. Well, normally, when you spent money on the condo, you have to ask yourself what the tax treatment of that would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, it's not deductible, so it would be an addition to basis. Example, you bought the condo. I'll use some unrealistic numbers, I guess, by today's standards. But you buy the condo for $100, and you redo the kitchen, and that costs you $50.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got $150 into it. That's your basis tax concept, meaning that if you sell the condo tomorrow and you get $200, you've got a $50 gain, $150 from $200.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have the $150 invested in the condo for the purchase price and the improvements, and then you get $50 back from the bad contractor that botched the kitchen, what have you done? Well, you've gotten your $50 back, and you, instead of having a condo with a basis of $150, you now are back to a $100 basis.
So you
can put that money in your pocket, or you can put it back into the condo for the kitchen that you wanted. But at least on those numbers, there's no income because you haven't been enriched. You've simply gotten your money back, your basis
I see.
Back.
Okay. What about, since we're talking about condos and homes, and we have this very difficult situation with forfeitures where people who own condos or own homes who may have lost their jobs or their income has been reduced or whatever, and they unfortunately can't keep up with the mortgages because of the depressed areas, not everywhere, certainly in California, but many areas are financially depressed. The market value of homes or condos or whatever goes below what perhaps you paid for it. and maybe goes below what the remaining mortgage is, what are the basic tax consequences there if you, as the homeowner, decide either I'm going to let the bank foreclose on me, or I'm going to try to go ahead and sell it and do the best I can. However, it may be that I can't get enough money to pay off the balance of the mortgage. Now, I know this is a very complicated question, but I think as long as I brought up the condo, I wonder if you would talk just a little bit about this.
Sure. I think it is a complex fact pattern. I think it kind of comes within the general rule of tax law, which is if you can't find a specific way that it's not taxable, meaning an exclusion from income, which is what the auto accident injury example involved, or a recovery of basis, which is your condo improvement example, then it's income. So I guess in your lost your home, and maybe you recover from a lender or something. I think you look at what your total investment is, and certainly if you have income beyond the total investment, it's certainly income. I think the tough example, because there are another set of kind of complex and not very intuitive tax rules about discharge of debt income.
That's what I'm thinking about.
And those rules basically say, and this is a common one that clients find hard to understand, and I think for good reason. So if, Chuck, if you loan me $100 tonight, and then tomorrow you say, you know what, Rob, you don't have to pay me back. Mm. That's okay. $100, not a problem. You don't have to pay me back. Well, I have to report that $100 as income because you gave it to me as a loan. That's not income. But when you discharge the debt, it's income. There are a bunch of exceptions from that. And as some listeners may know, there are exceptions dealing with bankruptcy and dealing with – and there's some special ones for home foreclosures. But I'd say any of those home foreclosure or home loss – forfeiture situations, you probably need a little bit of professional help.
You just can't do it yourself. And if there is a home foreclosure, and let's say you only had a first mortgage on your home, you don't have a second. My understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that if for some reason your property is foreclosed upon by the bank or the lending institution, and you only had the initial mortgage on the property, the bank can't go against you personally for whatever may continue to be owing on that mortgage. Is that correct?
I think it's certainly not a tax question,
it's not a tax question.
But I think the answer is that you're right. Mm-hmm. But as I say, it's a property or something, but it's not a tax question.
You are a certified specialist, and the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California is the major funder of this program, has been for many, many years. Probably, I think at this point, it's been funding the program for 22 years. What does it mean from the tax standpoint? I mean, we have certified public accountants. We have people who actually worked for the IRS who then become, I forget what the term is, they may not be CPAs, but they're
enrolled agents.
Mm-hmm. We have certified specialists in taxation, attorneys. What does it mean from the consumer's standpoint? If you could be modest and tell us, what does it mean from the consumer's standpoint if you've got a tax problem, to consider at least having a consultation with a certified specialist in taxation law?
Boy, the tax
rules... Did I get you with that one?
You did. Another one. The tax rules are so complex.
Yeah.
I mean, the tax system is really, as some of the politicians are saying these days, and they're right, it's quite ridiculous. Just in the 32 years that I've been a tax lawyer, it's gotten way, way worse.
But you look so young. Wow. That's pretty impressive.
It's Dorian Gray.
Yeah, Dorian.
The tax law, I think it's hard to generalize. Mm-hmm. I don't prepare tax returns. I know what I do, which is tax controversies and tax planning. Mm-hmm. I see the area that we're talking about tonight, the litigation settlement area. I see many, many people who are in the process of settling lawsuits. Usually they're plaintiffs and they are about to receive money. And I can say almost without exception, they are better off talking to a tax person, which might be a tax specialist, mm-hmm. might be an accountant, mm-hmm. somebody who has some knowledge about tax law in mm-hmm. this area mm-hmm. Before they sign documents. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that it is so important what the documents say, what the settlement agreement says, how a check is cut or checks, plural, are cut. How 1099 or W-2 forms are issued, mm-hmm. and that as a litigant, before you sign documents, or as a lawyer representing someone who's about to sign a litigation settlement agreement, you have a chance before you sign to influence mm-hmm. what those things say. It's, mm-hmm. I think, as any of us know intuitively, it's always much harder to get people to cooperate or to do what you want them to do when you no longer... When you no longer have documents that need to be signed.
No, and they're done.
They're done.
They're done, and that's it.
Yeah.
You as a certified specialist, as I understand it, have had to practice taxation law for a number of years. You essentially, as I understand it, had to take a second bar exam in your specialty. You have to have people who know something about the work that you've done, who make some kind of attestation to the Board of Legal Specialization. So there is a program that you had to go through, a number of hurdles that you had to jump over to get to where you are.
That's right, I believe in it, and I know the Legal Specialization Program has been successful in California, mm-hmm. and it's, as Chuck, you and I were just saying before the program, there are so many different areas of the law that we as lawyers can only know a tiny bit about. Mm-hmm, and so I think having a specialty is whether you're certified or not mm-hmm. is good. Mm-hmm. But there are also very competent lawyers, as we both know, who are very successful doing a variety of things. So mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's fine too. I think it's, but I do think increasingly the world is a very specialized and complex place, and that makes it harder for clients because, just as I said to you, gee, that's not a tax question. It's hard to know when you're a client what things are tax matters and what is sort of related but really a real property question or a question for a litigation lawyer.
One of the things, a couple of things that I want to let you all know about. By the way, we will do our Call a Lawyer night in a couple of weeks on October 24th. As a matter of fact, that evening on the air, we will be talking about the nuts and bolts of foreclosures. It is going to also be our Call a Lawyer night, so I hope you will join us. It's at 7 p.m. on October 24th, and if wherever you may be, whether you listen to this program live or delayed, the number to call for Call a Lawyer is 1-800-525-9917. Another thing that I want to mention to you, which I think is very important in terms of, I'm a great believer in specialization, and it may be because I've been doing this program for so long. And I've been a lawyer much longer than I've been doing this program, and I do believe that it's very valuable for someone who may have a problem in a particular area of the law to try to find someone who spends a great deal of his or her time in that area of the law, because things, as you say, are so complicated. What I want to let you all know is that there are 11 specialties certified by the Board of Legal Specialization, besides taxation law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, workers' compensation law, and admiralty and maritime law. And If you are interested in finding out who may be able to help you, I'll give you a couple of numbers right now. One is the statewide number for the Board of Legal Specialization, 415-538-2100. And then if you want to go to the internet, it's all lowercase, no spaces, www.californiaspecialist, that's singular, by the way, specialist.org, www.californiaspecialist.org. If you either call the phone number or go to the website, you can find out who the certified specialists are in your geographic area, wherever you may be in the state of California. One of the things that intrigues me, and unfortunately this first half hour, which is the statewide version of the program, is going much too fast, is I think we all have a fair idea when we are legally married, if there's going to be a divorce and assets are going to be split, that, at least correct me if I'm wrong on this, that there are not necessarily any tax consequences when people are divorcing parties are splitting their assets. On the other hand, if you are, let's say, not legally married, let's say you even have a domestic partnership, and you and your partner, whether it's a gay man-to-man situation or woman-to-woman situation, and you've been together for a number of years, you've developed assets together, and whether they're in both names or not, and let's say you're going to split up, it's a different situation, is it not? What are the basic things that people should be thinking about if they are in this kind of a relationship, which is not recognized as a legally married relationship?
It is. And Chuck, it's you've just raised a whole nother field of, I guess you could say, litigation. That is legal matters. You have settlements, mostly settlements in divorce. Most of them are, maybe many of them are mediated these days. Obviously, many of them are contested, but still, like most cases, they settle. Or if they don't settle, they go to judgment. So that's another type of legal dispute. As you said, with marriage, with legal marriage, it's close to accurate to say there aren't immediate tax consequences. Mm-hmm. That is, there is a provision in the tax law, in federal and state tax law, Internal Revenue Code Section 1041 is the code section. 1041 says that property settlements, property transfers between spouses and former spouses are not taxed. It's not considered a transfer. It's basically, you can divvy up things however you want, however the courts say or however the parties agree, not taxable. Contrast that, as your question says, contrast that to a non-legal marriage, whether it's, regardless of the gender of the people, if they're not legally married, which is, going to the gay marriage debate, a huge issue, I think, as a tax lawyer, is what do you do if you have non-married people who are separating and dividing up assets? And the strange thing, or at least it strikes many people as strange, from a tax viewpoint, is all of those transfers are potentially taxable, whether or not any money changes hands. Mm-hmm. So if I am cohabiting with another person and then I transfer stock to that person in settlement of our cohabitation dispute, that is, it's as if I just sold that stock. Doesn't matter how many years we cohabited, that is a sale, and I have income on that transfer. So,
but when you say I, you mean the person who gets the stock?
The person who gets the stock has income, and I just, and if I gave them cash, that would be maybe an easier example.
Yeah.
I gave them cash, so I gave my partner cash. My partner ends up with, let's say it's $1 million, just to make it interesting.
Right, right.
A large sum of money, that is $1 million of income.
Really?
Now suppose I gave them $1 million of appreciated stock.
Yes.
And let's say that I got this because, let's make this interesting. I'm not a tax lawyer. I'm, in fact, some internet pioneer. And so I have stock in a company that I founded or participated in as an employee or something. And so my stock has...
With no cash basis at all.
Exactly.
Just the brilliance of this person.
Of this, which is not me, let's be clear. But so this $1 million of stock, which I have a zero basis, so you can, I hope, see this one coming. I transfer it to my partner. That triggers a deemed sale to me, which means I just had $1 million of income.
Oh, wow.
And then you or whoever my partner is who receives it has $1 million of income. So all of this, there are some ways around this, but there are usually no ways around it if you don't plan ahead.
Okay, so that's the key, planning ahead. If you're dealing with much money at all and there are potential tax consequences, you want to plan ahead. What about in the situation where, let's say you have been improperly fired from your job, at least you believe you have, and you bring an action for unlawful termination of employment against your former employer, and you actually get a judgment and it is paid off. Let's say your attorney took it on a contingent fee basis, to make it simple. One-third of the judgment would be the attorney's fee. What are the tax consequences there?
Very common situation.
And we have about 1.5 minutes left.
Okay. Well, this is a racehorse kind of answer.
That's right.
Very common situation. Probably some portion of the amount that you get is wages, meaning that it should be treated as wages with employment taxes and withholding.
Yes.
Usually the employer or former employer and employee agree on a wage number. That's advisable for a variety of reasons. Usually there is a big component, sometimes the majority of the payment is for emotional distress or general damages, not wages. So those would be taxable but not subject to withholding, typically reported on a 1099 form.
So if you received a judgment or a settlement, and we've got about half a minute left, Which, and let's take emotional distress out of this. Is that taxable? Because it's income that you should have gotten while working, and now you've gotten a judgment to reimburse yourself for working.
That's right. It is taxable. It is taxable. I would say this, though, about attorney's fees, because this is an important, I guess, segue into the attorney's fees topic that we won't get to talk about much, except to say beware. Generally speaking, and there's a Supreme Court case called Banks, decided in 2005, that says when you get money, and even if your attorney gets a third or 40% or more directly paid by the defendant, that is still income to you. So you need to report that and deduct it somehow on your return.
We need to stop right there. We have come to the end of the statewide version of the program.
Okay.
All right. It is 7:20. Actually, it looks like 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. We'll come back to that, by the way, in just a moment, everybody. But as I said a few minutes ago, this half hour unfortunately goes so quickly that we can't cover everything that we'd like to. But let me expand on this for you. My guest is Robert Wood, who I refer to as Rob. That's what he likes to be known as. He's a specialist in taxation law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in San Francisco. If you have a tax question, and we'll expand it beyond what we've talked about so far, if you'd like, it's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. And let me also mention to you that certified specialist David Hellman in taxation law and estate planning will be with us for our annual preparing your tax return, or at least tax suggestions that you might want to follow before the end of the year. David will be with us on Wednesday, November 7th, so you might want to keep that in mind if we don't get to your question tonight. Also, before we take the first call, I'd like to mention that tomorrow at the San Mateo County Law Library in Redwood City, there will be a presentation on the basics of Medi-Cal eligibility. And certified specialist Matt O'Donnell will be there. Matt has an office in Menlo Park. And this will start at noon. That's tomorrow, October 11th. He'll cover the use of trusts and durable powers of attorney in long-term care planning. And he'll talk about regulations which may limit Medi-Cal eligibility and benefits, and do a pretty much nuts and bolts discussion of Medi-Cal eligibility and other things that may go with it. So you're invited to go, and it's at the Law Library in Redwood City, the San Mateo County Law Library, 710 Hamilton Street. And if you would like to get more information, you can call them tomorrow at 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. And by the way, it's right across the street from the Hall of Justice in Redwood City, which is on Marshall Street. And there is a website in case you'd like to look at that. It's www.smcll.org, SMC standing for San Mateo County, LLLawlibrary.org, SMCLL.org. All right, Eve, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi there.
So I have a question about...
Eve, is your radio on?
It's in the other room.
I could hear an echo, a little bit of an echo, but go ahead.
My question is, I won a lawsuit against my landlord. Hmm. It settled. We didn't go to court. They settled it. And I have been told that I'm going to be expected to pay taxes on the entire thing, and I can write off my lawyer's fee. But what I am concerned about is this was a settlement that I got because of he was extremely negligent. Mm-hmm. So basically, and it seems to me that at least a third of that settlement should be not taxable because it's rent I paid that I, you know,
so
I
you
paid
got
him money in, and I didn't get a good house for it.
Eve, in your lawsuit, you got in the settlement, you got back some of the rent that you paid, but you also got some other money. And what was that for?
It was for harassment.
Oh, really?
And, harassment and negligence and
negligence for what?
Negligence for keeping up the property.
Oh, really? Okay. Now, what about did the settlement include an amount of money for your lawyer?
Well, the lawyer was paid out of it. She took a third of it.
He took a third. He was on a contingent fee basis?
She was on a contingency basis.
And now who has told you that you are going to have tax consequences here?
Well, pretty much every tax person that I have talked to.
You haven't found one that works yet, huh? Okay.
My thing is I just keep thinking, but isn't this part of this money is reimbursement for what I already paid but didn't get?
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Eve, this is Rob Wood. I think I have to be yet another tax person to say that it sounds all taxable. Mm. Unfortunately, the general rule is that recoveries are taxable income. Even though you paid for something you didn't get, there's no exception I can think of, at least offhand, that would shield any of it, meaning it would all be reported as income. I suppose it might be possible to come up with a theory why it might be capital gain instead of ordinary income. But that's something we haven't talked about yet tonight, but a capital gain is something where you have a property interest and you hold it for more than a year would be long-term capital gain. So, I mean, sometimes, and of course, as the news these days and the political debates show, capital gain rates are much lower than ordinary income rates, so 15% versus 35%. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But as I say, I don't want to get your hopes up. That would probably be a stretch on these facts. So I think you're probably going to have to pay tax.
Do you have an accountant, Eve?
Well, I've never made more than $30,000 a year, so I had no need for an accountant.
Right. Well,
but I've been in communication with somebody who was referred to me by a friend who's a CPA.
Uh-huh. And may I ask you this, in terms of the judgment that you got, and this has been paid by your former landlord?
He's still my landlord. I haven't moved.
Oh, he's still your landlord, but has he paid the settlement?
It was actually his insurance company that paid the settlement.
Oh, it was. How much did you get, if you don't mind my asking?
What was
the total amount?
The total was, I can't remember. Because
roughly.
The lawyer immediately took a big chunk of it.
Yeah, but roughly.
I think it was about $30,000.
$30,000, wow. And the lawyer took a third.
Yeah.
All right. Rob, that in that kind of a situation, using those figures, the settlement was $30,000. The lawyer took a third. Would she not be able to take a deduction for at least the $10,000 that the lawyer took as his fee?
Absolutely, but the question is what kind of deduction?
Oh,
In an employment example, such as we were doing before the break, in an employment lawsuit. There is a specific statutory above-the-line deduction, which I would call gold-plated, meaning it really is effective on your $30,000 example. It's essentially like only receiving $20,000. You take the deduction above the line, meaning you truly get the full benefit. In your example, Eve, I'm afraid your legal fee deduction is below the line, meaning that you are subject to various limitations. I think you're on the right path if you're talking to an accountant. I think that's what I would suggest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good luck to you, Eve. Maybe in a future program when David Hellman is on here on November 7th, why don't you, if you do resolve this question by that time, why don't you plan to call in and tell us what happened, would you?
Well, I'm still anticipating, if I don't get a 1099 from the lawyer, from the landlord's lawyers,
I don't know that. I don't know that that makes any difference, Eve. You be careful on that 1099 thing. I didn't get a 1099, so I don't know anything. Be careful. All right, we're going to move on. Good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care. I'm noticing that tonight the persons who are calling in are all women. Now, why is that? Why do we have no men calling in on tax questions? Not that I don't want women to do this, but I find it kind of interesting. Ruth Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Yeah, it's usually the reverse.
I know.
What I was going to ask, two questions, tax consequences. If you bring a suit against someone for an ADA violation.
Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yeah, thank you. And you get compensatory damages and punitive damages. Mm-hmm. Are punitive damages, do you have to pay taxes on that? And then I have a second question.
All right. Stop with your first one and let's see what Rob has to say.
Yeah, Ruth Ann, unfortunately, the answer is real simple on the punitive damage question, and that is punitive damages are always taxable. So it doesn't matter, and there's a Supreme Court case on that very point called Ogilvie. Punitive damages, it doesn't matter whether it's an ADA case, Americans with Disabilities Act, or a personal injury case of some sort, or it doesn't matter what kind of case it is. Punitive damages are taxable income. The theory, incidentally, of the Supreme Court was, by definition, punitive damages are to punish someone, the defendant, not to compensate you. So anyway, that part is the easy one. It's income to you. What's the second question?
Well, along the lines, you touched on it with the second question, which is if you are injured, and in some way you get compensation or settlement for pain and suffering, or pain and suffering damages taxable?
If it's physical, they are not. And you might well ask, well, what do you mean by physical? So if
you're talking like a broken leg or a broken hip versus... Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, that's okay. A good example. The IRS would like you because, I mean, they'd like you if you broke your hip, I guess, or your leg.
That seems kind of nasty.
Well, but the reason they'd like you is that it's very obvious that you are physically injured.
Okay, all right.
What if,
it's not feigning an injury, then?
No, it's
what they're saying.
It's not. Yeah. It's observable. Observable bodily harm. So the answer is, in that kind of a case, no question, the damages for your broken leg are tax-free. And, by the way, that would include all the damages of any sort for your broken leg. So if you haven't worked all year because of your broken leg, all the wages that you get, the lost wages, you might think lost wages would probably be treated like wages and taxed. But if the lost wages are for your physical injury, it's tax-free.
That's very interesting.
So the punitive
was pain and suffering, not loss of wages.
Fair enough. No, pain and suffering, I'm sorry to digress.
Okay.
Pain and suffering damages, as long as it's a physical injury, are tax-free. Punitive damages for the physical injury or punitive damages for pain and suffering, taxable.
Yeah. Now, what was your second question, Ruthann?
No, that was it. My second question was the pain and suffering.
All right.
Both of them. Thank you.
Hey, nice to have you call.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. Yes. Bye-bye. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing tax consequences of lawsuits, settlements, decisions. If you have some question that is in any other area of tax law, you're welcome to call in. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. My guest is Rob Wood, a specialist in taxation law certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in San Francisco. And so join us if you have a question. And if you're a man and have not yet gone to your phone, show these women, men, that you can also have a tax question. Jennifer, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
You're on the air, my dear.
Yeah, hi. I'm going to be receiving a settlement, and it's a couple of $100,000. It is for, the attorneys have not written the settlement yet.
But what is it for? Basically, what's it for, Jennifer?
It's emotional damage.
Ah, okay.
That's what I believe it will come down to.
Okay, all right.
There is an argument for loss of wages, but I don't think
This is something that's arising out of an unlawful termination of employment?
Yes.
They fired you?
Well, it's more complicated.
Okay, well, what they're trying to do is apparently design a settlement where the $200,000 will be described for emotional damages. Is that what you think they're doing?
Well, my question is I've been listening to your program, and I wanted to find out about how do I plan?
Okay.
Or do I have any ability to plan, or do I have any discussion? Are there ways, so that I can tax plan?
All right. Jennifer, let me interrupt if you don't mind. Your attorney, I presume, is an employment law attorney?
Yes.
Okay. Not a tax attorney?
No.
Okay.
No. And he did say to me that we should speak to a tax attorney.
I think that was very wise advice. As I said in the first half hour of the program, I have been a lawyer for a long time. My job as a deputy DA in San Mateo County in the Consumer Protection Unit has helped me to be, I think, a real consumer advocate. And I'm a real believer in people educating themselves and not avoiding that they may have to pay some money to learn what perhaps the good and the bad may be. So my suggestion to you, if I may, in light of also your attorney having said that you really need some tax advice, do you, by the way, have a CPA who does your tax return every year?
I do not, but I work for several CPAs.
You work in an office with CPAs?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Well, then you have people available to you. I was going to mention to you my feeling about this. If you did not have people, if you did not work with people who were CPAs who could give you some specific legal advice, at least on how the tax consequences work, you might want to contact the Board of Legal Specialization and have at least an initial consultation with a certified specialist in taxation law, wherever either you work in that city or wherever you live, whatever city that may be, and that's... Pardon me, go ahead.
I did write that website down when you said that.
I think it's worth it. My experience has been at least, and I haven't I didn't ask Rob this, and I, you know, we're going to have, as I mentioned, David Hellman on, a certified specialist in taxation as well as estate planning, on November 7th. And I've never asked David this either. But I do know that, for example, if I may digress for just a moment, attorneys who are bankruptcy certified specialists have, and we've done quite a bit of bankruptcy programs on this show over the years, have told me that an initial consultation, bankruptcy certified specialist may do it for no charge whatsoever. So what you might want to do is contact the Board of Legal Specialization through the website there, find out who the certified specialists in taxation are in your area, and then call the office and find out, I'd like to have an initial consultation. Can you tell me whether or not there will be a fee or how it works in your office? I think that's the way to do it. And you do need, with what you're telling us, if you don't mind my saying, this $200,000, which is going to be for emotional damages, with what Rob said in the earlier part of the program, I believe, Rob, you said would be taxable.
Yeah, it's taxable. I mean, the only sort of glimmer of hope I would offer is there are a couple of tax cases. One is called Domeny, D-O-M-E-N-Y. One is called Parkinson, P-A-R-K-I-N-S-O-N. Those are two tax court cases. If you go to my website, which is woodllp.com, you'll see articles about these cases. They were 2010, I think, tax court cases dealing with employment situations in which the employees became physically ill. And the question is that the same as physical injury, or is it mere emotional distress? You probably want to do some reading about that, and as Chuck says, speak with a tax lawyer.
Okay.
Yeah, and let me give you Rob's website again. It's www. Is it not?
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
www.woodllp. That's woodllp.com. In case you'd like to learn something about that. Good luck to you, Jennifer.
Thank you very much.
Why don't you do this? Because I would like to have a follow up from you too. If you get this resolved by November 7th, plan to call in, will you, when we do a program on tax planning for the end of the year?
I will, and I plan to contact Robert.
All right. Very good.
Thanks very much.
Take care now. Bye-bye. Thanks for calling. Kathy, welcome to Your Legal Rights. And then, believe it or not, we have Robert who will be, I hope, waiting for us. But, Kathy, go ahead with your question.
Okay. A relative passed away and is planning to distribute $20,000 to $30,000 per person to the family members.
This is pursuant to a will?
The money was in a CD.
Oh, okay. All right.
And so are there different ways that the funds can be distributed, and what are the various tax consequences? I think it's the CD said payable upon death or something.
Okay. Let me, first of all, it doesn't sound like there's a legal dispute there.
No, no legal dispute.
Okay, which is good. I mean, I see so many legal disputes. I don't think there's a legal dispute, and therefore a payment, if, as Chuck asked, is this pursuant to a will, it sounds like it's some kind of will substitute. There's some kind of document that says, upon my death, the money goes as follows. Or, in other words, the bank CD.
Yes, the bank.
Okay,
CD.
So you're listed maybe as a beneficiary or something. I guess I'm going to take a leap here and say it sounds like you are inheriting the money. And if that is true, a gift or inheritance is not income. So I think you
and
want...
And it's not considered a gift under the gift tax law.
Well, it may be, but it's not your problem. So you get...
All right.
I mean, let's just look at it from your perspective. If you get a check for $20,000 or $30,000 because of the death of your uncle or whoever it may be,
mm-hmm.
And you can document that that's the reason you got it, it was a gift or inheritance, it is not income. So, and that means it doesn't go on your income tax return. It's simply a non-event. as far as the income tax law is concerned. Whoever gave it to you, mm-hmm. the decedent or the person who's still living, if they're still alive, mm-hmm. that person may have gift or estate tax consequences, mm. but that's not your issue.
Interesting, interesting. Now, how many of you are going to be getting $20,000 to $30,000?
Each sibling.
How many? How many siblings?
Four, and it's all been, it was all set up.
So we're talking about somewhere between $80,000 to $120,000, right?
Yes.
Have either of you or your other relatives contacted any kind of tax person to try to help you figure this out?
Not yet. That's
well, you better. You better. I don't know that there is anything that certainly you can do in light of probably what the provisions of the CD were, but you certainly need to look into it, and it probably wouldn't be that expensive at this point to get some initial advice and find out the good and hopefully find out if there is any bad at all.
Okay.
Okay, Kathy.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Bye-bye. Robert, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, I'll try to be brief. I invest some money in several different companies. It turned out that all the companies were linked to one individual in San Diego who was running basically pump and dump operations, and I tried to negotiate.
Wait, Robert. What does pump and dump mean? I don't know what that means.
Oh, well, it means that they acquire a small company, they change the business of the company and then in the name of the company, and operated as a penny stock, for instance, or a, mm-hmm. a pink sheet stock, and they get a bunch of people to call people and tell you that's the greatest thing since sliced bread, et cetera.
And they sell it?
They get they try to get people to buy it. If you're an accredited investor, they contact you, they send you the financials, and.
All right.
The problem being that they were all phony. Anyway, I tried to negotiate with the fellow that's responsible for hiring the people that were pushing the stock,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't responsive. So I went on the internet and put up a web page about my problem, and lo and behold, 30 or 40 other people started contacting me.
Mm-hmm.
Same situation. So it's millions and millions of dollars.
Ooh.
$3 million, one guy's out, two people
so,
are out.
So if you wouldn't mind, Robert, come to what you think may be the tax question, would you?
Okay. Well, several of us got together and sued the fellow. Now, if we recover, what are the tax consequences?
Do you think he has any assets?
He's got plenty of assets.
Does he? Okay. Okay. So if you recover, you mean you recover what you invested? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Is there a tax consequence in if you let's say you invested $50,000 just for the sake of argument,
right.
and you let's say you recover up to $50,000, you're wondering if that's any kind of a there's a tax consequence
right.
with that?
Uh-huh.
And the answer, Robert, is that there. If, of course, there is. I guess the good news is that is. I mean, you're describing a fairly common, unfortunately, a fairly common investment loss. Type of lawsuit. It doesn't matter too much whether the lawsuit is brought as a fraud action or some mm-hmm. kind of securities action. I think there are different mechanical ways of mm-hmm. proceeding, but ultimately, as Chuck was saying, if you invested X mm-hmm. and then you get X back, it's not income.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or at least
not income.
It's not income if
okay.
you're merely recovering what you invested. In
yeah.
other words.
Yeah.
I guess the traditional way of referring to this would be a recovery of basis.
Mm-hmm.
The
right.
bad news, though, is suppose that you have good lawyers and this person, you know, did terrible things and consistently and repetitively. And so let's say you invested, again, let's, you know, up the numbers from 50,000 and make it big numbers. Let's mm-hmm. say you invested $1 million and you get back $2 million. And maybe you've spent lots of lawyer's fees and energy in between. If you haven't deducted, and that's again a key, there's a tax benefit concept in the tax law.
We haven't deducted.
Okay, so you haven't deducted your losses previously. So you have your, in my example, your big million-dollar basis, and then if you get $2 million, presumably you have $1 million of gain, which would be income, and hopefully, because you, I imagine, were holding these investments as capital assets, you may have long-term capital gain on the extra million. But as Chuck says, there's certainly some tax issues to contemplate for you and the other investors.
Have you brought filed a lawsuit against this fellow, Robert?
Yes, it was filed.
Okay, and you're in the process of litigation at this point, I presume?
Well, yeah, I'm not there yet. We haven't even had a court appearance. But
did anybody, do you believe that there's criminal fraud involved in this?
Well, it seems to be because as a result of my webpage, FINRA called me, the FBI called me. And,
I see.
You know.
Is there any...
After several of these people for quite a while, and they haven't... Mm-hmm.
To your knowledge, is there any government agency that's going to bring some kind of a criminal case against this guy?
They won't tell you that.
They won't tell you that. Because certainly under the state laws, if you are a victim of a crime, such as this, a white-collar crime, and the court, let's say, orders restitution, that can be done. I don't know. Let's just take the state approach to this, Rob. If the court, the superior court, ends up ordering that this guy who Robert invested his money with is required to perform restitution, would that make any difference?
Another interesting question. Generally, restitution payments are the same as any other kind of payment that you might receive for a settlement or judgment. So the answer would be pretty much the same, Robert, as I previously said. If you got restitution and you merely got your money back and you had not deducted your investment loss, then it shouldn't be income. If you get restitution that is more than your original investment, it would be gain or income.
Okay. Good luck to you, Robert.
Thank you. Bye.
By the way, I think we're going to try to take one more call, and then I do invite you to join us on November 7th when we will talk about trying to get some suggestions of what you might do before the end of the year and trying to limit your tax consequences. David Hellman will be here on Wednesday, November 7th. He is a certified specialist in taxation law. Also, by the way, I want to remind you, we're going to have our Call a Lawyer Night on October 24th at 7 o'clock. That number, 1-415-841-4134. And we're going to take one more call, and this is Tucker. Tucker, you've got about half a minute. I'm sorry to limit your time. Go ahead. Are you there? Did we lose Tucker? All right. Is Bill there?
Hello.
Yeah, is this Bill? Is this Bill?
It is.
Bill, you've got half a minute. Go ahead.
Wow. I don't know if that'll work. But anyway, I am a real estate investor. I've purchased some fixer-upper properties, one in 2007 and one in 2009. One was a high market real estate market, and, of course, one was a low real estate market. And they were purchased substantially less than the prevailing price for these properties because they were in such bad condition. Apparently, what happens is the assessor's office is allowed to come around and kind of look at the price of the sale and look at some printouts or something and say, "Oh, well, this is too low for the neighborhood." And then come
Tucker, I've got to interrupt you. I'm sorry you came in at the end of the program. Join us, if you would, on November 7th, would you?
Okay.
And call in earlier. Don't wait till the end of the program, if you would, because we've just run out of time. Rob, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Great to see you again. Rob Wood is a certified specialist in taxation law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in San Francisco. Rob, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Your Legal Rights staff production members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And if you have Actually, legal questions, you can call and try to get an appointment with an attorney through the Lawyer Referral Service in San Francisco, 415-989-1616. Next week, we're going to be talking about Proposition 36, the Three Strikes Reform Act of 2012. My guests will be Steve Wagstaff, San Mateo County District Attorney, retired Judge Eugene Hyman of Santa Clara, Michael Romano, Director of the Three Strikes Project at Stanford Law School, and certified specialist in criminal law, Jeff Hayden. Thanks for listening. I'm Chuck Finney.